You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome in to another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We're getting into today the draft preview. Hey, how is the Kings prospect pool? How do we see the top of the draft shaking up, and where do we see the Kings drafting in the second round? Get in the chat, like and subscribe, and let's go. All right, man, the draft snuck up on us, boys. You know, last couple of years, we've been thinking about the draft since January. Now we're a playoff team, so snuck up on us. But we did some research, and I'm excited to talk about this podcast. But before that, how are we doing, boys? Russell, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I think I'm having a better day than the Calgary Flames, but nothing else. Can't complain.
Man.
How are you doing, Joe?
Is that a dig at Joe or a dig at Calgary?
I just love everything that's imploding up in Calgary.
It's something I
predicted should have happened after the Kachuk trade. It's just they decided to go all in and keep the train running, but instead of maybe going more futures route with that Kachuk trade. But I don't know. It just seems like something else is kind of going on where all these players just don't want to be there. And it doesn't have to do with the coach at this point. He's not even there, so I don't know what it is.
So side note, Joe.
Yeah.
Foley is one of the players that don't want to be there. Is Foley going to be a King? Yes or no?
No. I'm going to say no. But like, I don't like you could conceivably run that team back, and they would be with a new coach,
progressively right? Mediocre. Yes.
With a new coach who is willing to do a little bit more. Kind of progressive, maybe a little more offense, maybe, God forbid, integrate some younger players into the lineup. They have a couple of exciting prospects, Coronado, Peltier, that were like knocking on that door. If they get a save, like that's a playoff team, easily a playoff team.
Yeah, Dustin Wolf is coming. He's on the way, right? He's supposed to be there next year.
There's no way, you know, obviously it was not exactly a great mix between Huberdeau and Sutter. But you get a coach that's willing to – I just am amazed that it's kind of just crumbling. You know, Hanifin, it looks like he's going to get traded. Toffoli's going to be out. I don't know. What do you do now with Lindholm? I mean, the team is – they're still, as of today, like as of this recording, probably the best defensive group in the division. That includes Vegas. Like, they're really freaking good back there. It's just
So, Joe, I want to ask you this.
Yeah.
What modern head coach outside of the head coach that they just signed would be best for Huberdeau, right? He's a roamer, right? So what offensive scheme would be best for him?
Well, the easy one would go back to who he had in Florida with Andrew Brunette. That would have been, and he just went to Nashville, if I'm not mistaken. Like, you've got a team in Calgary that has some horses that can play a bit more of a let's go. Let's get up and play. Huberdeau, you mentioned. Lindholm's a player. You look at the back end. Hanifin can skate. Mackenzie Weegar's excellent. I mean, go down the line. This is a team that's got some players that can move. They can move the puck. And listen, we love Daryl Sutter for what he did with LA, but he's not going to necessarily play that style. His team was dominant possession-wise, but they were kind of a one-dimensional style of play. So it's like – I don't know anything about that coach that they have in there now. I'm going to be very curious to see, like, who does he surround himself with? But, like, Andrew Brunette was who, if Calgary got Andrew Brunette reunited with Uyghur, Huberdeau, that offensive, look what he did with the Devils. Like, that Devils team was one of the best offensive teams in the league off the rush, just as Florida was the year before. And I think that he would have been a perfect, perfect fit. It's probably lazy, honestly, just because, well, he was the coach in Florida for Huberdeau. Why not just bring him to Calgary? I admit, maybe it's lazy, but it did seem like a really nice fit, especially.
But what works, right?
It would have been worth the shot. So we'll see. Listen, I'm a huge Craig Conroy fan, so I guess I'll trust to see what he does over there. I've always been a kind of a closet Flames fan back in the day. I adored that run with Iginla to the Cup that they, you know, they lost to Tampa. But I don't know. I pull for them, but and I was still really, because I'm like, just run it back, guys. Run it back. You're going to be fine. But now I don't know what to expect. I don't know what they're going to do. We'll see.
So before we get into this podcast, we're going to get into our sponsor here, and that's DraftKings. New customers can download DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN to bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN, DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Let's get into our podcast, because I don't want to interrupt our flow, because we usually have great flow. So just get the DraftKings out of the way. Thank you for our sponsor. Appreciate that. Let's get into the meat and potatoes here. Let's start with the top of the draft. Obviously, the Kings are not drafting there. We are used to drafting there. But we have some rivals drafting the top five. How do we feel about this? I mean, is Bedard the unanimous? Is there a player that you feel like that can usurp that? Where do you want to go here? Let's talk about let's go with that Russell.
Yeah, Bedard's easily the unanimous. I mean, it'd be an overwhelming surprise if they didn't pick him, the Blackhawks, that is. And with the Ducks, I think they can go a couple ways, it seems like. I mean, it's certainly from everything I've seen, everything I've read, the top five players in this draft are all studs. And there's players that are better than a few and at certain skill sets. But I don't know. Yeah, I think it's Bedard's draft. And I think that's obvious, but the rest of the top five should be interesting, I guess.
Joe, where is the top five shakeout for you? Where is there a player that peaks themselves above the rest for you?
I think the name everybody's curious to see where they go is Michkov, right? Where he could go as high as two, he could go as low as who knows in the double digits, you know, 10, 11, 12, I don't know. To me, I see Michkov and I see San Jose as perfect. And the reason I say this is because they're like Chicago, you're going to get – that's a no-brainer. You're picking Bedard. You move on. The Ducks are close. Listen, the Ducks are close. They are not far from being competitive. Get one of these guys like Fantilli or Carlson who can help you within the next 2 to 3 years. Don't you – like, you don't need to wait.
Maybe 1 to 2 years.
Maybe 1 to 2 years. Like, the way I look at that team is a hell of a lot closer, I think, than San Jose, because San Jose's got more tearing down to do. They've got more contracts to get rid of. They've got more tearing down to do. So they're probably looking at least 3 years out. So to me, I think Michkov is a really good fit for a team like San Jose, who's probably got a few years away. And I look at Columbus again, that team, we talked about it, I think, before, intriguing prospects. They've obviously making moves kind of in a win now, right? They just made the deal for Provorov and Severson. This team wants to be competitive. They signed Goudreau, the line A they kept. So, again, I think a Carlson or Fantilli to Columbus makes sense because they're going to have more of an immediate impact. I like Michkov to San Jose. I think that's perfect for them, their timeline and everything else. I think it fits. So it sucks, frankly, because he could be, you know, the best of the bunch, not named Bedard, and he's going to end up in San Jose. But that's, if I'm San Jose, that's, I'm aiming for the moon, because you're still in teardown mode, right? They're not close.
So you say the best of the bunch. You know, Corey Pronman said he is the highest ceiling of any player in this draft. And right. I agree with him. No offense to Bedard. I think Michkov, watching him in the U18s and him play against Bedard, I thought Michkov was better. I really do. And I think you look at the Regency bias, the curtain that's over Russia, and what's going on in in political and geographical and contract, right? He's not available till 2025. I think he's the better player, to be honest with you. I think he's the more, not better player, but he's the more offensively gifted player than Bedard. And that you'd say, oh, that's crazy because, you know, Bedard beat Gretzky's records. But you look at the high-end possibility of just pure offensive skill set, it's Mitchkov, and it's not even close. I really don't think that. But the fact that Bedard plays in Canada and hockey is a Canada sport, he's the player to draft. And you would be stupid if you were Chicago and would draft anybody else because you don't know what's going on with Mitchkov. But the Sharks at four? I've seen mock drafts where Mitchkov's going nine. Like, people are waiting that far away to like he's the second best player in this draft. And because Russia quotient or whatever that is.
Well, like it's also
Sharks,
it's
like
also,
you said, like you said, Sharks don't have to perform now. They have to get rid of Carlson. They have to get rid of a lot of other players. They have to get ready to go. They're in a spin cycle with their dynamic as a team. That Mitchkov's the perfect person. You can wait 2 years and let all that stuff settle down, the dust settle, and you have an elite offensive player that could possibly step in line in your first line in 2025.
Yeah, that's the thing. And you would still have in those few years, like Thomas Hertl's there forever, Couture's there, but it's kind of a mishmash right now. And yes, they have some very exciting prospects, obviously, right? Eklund is there. He's probably their biggest prospect at the moment. But I don't know that they're deep enough in the prospects or that they have the NHL-ready type prospects, enough of them. Like, I look at a Columbus. They got a lot of guys percolating in the right getting Rhett Johnson's one. We did it the other show. Anaheim's another one. A lot of prospects that have made their debuts, have started to play regular roles. So I think they're getting up. They're just a lot further in the process.
San Jose's going to suffer for a little bit.
Right? That's where I'm at with it. I don't know. Ron,
what do you think? No, I totally agree. Mitchkov probably has the highest ceiling out of any player in this draft, and that's Steven Bedard, right? But he probably has one of the lowest floors of all the players in the top five that we're talking about. So it's tough because I'm not even going to talk about Mitchkov to one. But if you look at Anaheim, when you have Pat Verbeek, who's just going to be his first real like high profile draft, he's not going to want to take a player that is not going to be available for a couple of years. Yeah, it's got to be someone that's going to be making an impact sooner rather than later. And it's like, okay, you don't want fans to be waiting around. So I think they're going Fantilli. I know I've seen reports going Carlson, but I think that would be a miss. I think Fantilli is almost on like – I've heard like people say that Fantilli would be number one in the last like four or five drafts, which is pretty wild to think.
I agree with that too, though.
Yeah, but – so yeah, I think Fantilli goes to Anaheim. But I mean, with Columbus,
Kekalainen is a wild card.
That's the thing, too. Is like you.
But do you think Fantilli is getting the extra nod? Not only, I mean, he's had great stats, but the fact that Beniers went from the NCAA and he's done great, not only in the NHL but in the playoffs, do you think that gives Fantilli a bump coming from the college ranks?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think that's really the main reason he's going number two or has a bump over the others. I think he's just a really good player. I mean, freshman Hobie Baker winner. What was the first one since Paul Kariya or whatever? And so, yeah, there's a lot of other reasons, and not just because of the college aspect and all that, that he's going to go number two. He's just an incredibly good player. And yeah, it's like Kings fans, including myself, get excited that the Ducks didn't get number one. But it's a little disappointing because they're still going to get a pretty good consolation price in Fantilli number two. But with all the stuff you mentioned with San Jose about how they still have time, they can wait a little bit because obviously Carlson's still there and you need to figure out a way to get rid of that contract straight away. But you could say the same thing about Columbus because they have so many players that are available to let them wait a little bit. I mean, you have Kent Johnson, who's still a young player, Cole Sillinger. Sure. Chinnikov, all these good young players that they can kind of bide time a little bit. And it's not like Columbus is going to be picked to contend for a Stanley Cup probably next year or even the year after that. So I think they could still bide their time, and I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe go for the wild card in Michkov here.
Do you think Michkov will be Kaprizov? Do you think instantly impact 60 plus points right away? He'll be like, what, 23 the time he comes to the NHL?
Probably. I mean, the things I saw Michkov do at the U18s, it was just like I'm watching the next reincarnation of Pavel Datsyuk. Like this stuff he was doing with the puck, I remember even going back to the last few years, you heard about it, the talk before, like this past year, was Bedard and Michkov. Yep. It was those two players. Yep. It was like, oh yeah, the 2023 draft is going to be crazy because you have these two players in Bedard and Michkov. It wasn't just Bedard. It was Michkov was along with it. But now that's kind of gone away because you mentioned the whole Russia thing. He's got a contract tied there, so he's not going to be over a while. He's not going to be over here in a bit. And he also hasn't really talked to any teams, hasn't worked out with any teams. So it's this huge wild card that this draft that everybody's going to be paying attention to. And I'm curious, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes number two. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes 10 plus, 10, 15 maybe. I mean, that's just
how much the wild card is. I mean, I think it would really surprise me if he gets all the way to 10 or later. I think that's just too big.
There's been multiple mock drafts with reputable people that have him at 9 to 11.
Yeah, I believe it. I just think that's too big of a miss. The one thing I'll say, though, is in those GM's defense that would do that, and I look at Kekalainen, and obviously I don't know what conversations he's had with Columbus, but he's been there a while now and hasn't exactly accomplished a whole lot. He may not have 3 years, so he may not have the time to wait for Michkov to get here. So I do think he's a wild card, and he is absolutely the GM I can see taking a swing at a Michkov. But I wonder, you know, if GMs are just willing to wait that out. That's a long time, but man, he's so freaking talented. I don't know how the team just lets him go to the.
And I've seen so many highlights of Bedard, but the highlights for Michkov, anybody who's listening right now, just look up Michkov highlights. And you're going to be like, you have no doubt this guy is just the most supreme offensive talent I've seen in the last decade. Like, it's just ridiculous the amount of talent this guy has. And it's just, if he was in Canada, I think he'd be over Bedard, to be honest with you. Maybe. I think he was in, it's just that kind of prejudice towards what's going on here with, and you know, Russia, Ukraine, you have him sign the contract, yes, yada yada, but the kid's got some talent, and ultimately money's going to talk. Whether he whether he stays in Russia until his draft contract ends and he comes over at 27 or not, eventually he's going to come to the NHL and he's going to be a dominant player. I fully believe that.
Yeah, and if you look at the Blue Jackets' recent draft picks, I mean, David Hirachek was probably could have gone higher than six if he didn't have that injury during his draft year.
My love. Look
at the year before that, Kent Johnson at five. Mm-hmm. That was a player that maybe was considered a reach at that time. I thought he was one of my favorite players in that draft, but I mean, a lot of people considered him more of a flashy player, not necessarily the more all-around type of player that some teams were looking for. And then before that, you got Chinnikov with the first round pick, another Russian player. That was a big surprise at that draft. So, I mean, Kekalainen has known to go for these home run type of swings in the past. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Michkov has the name read at three.
So, home runs or not, the Kings are in an interesting position here. So, we've already traded away our first overall pick for Gavrikov and, you know, Korpisalov in this last season. So, now we got the two. We got our second round pick right around the 50 range. Are we going to trade that away? Because that seems like the Kings' MO. Hey, we're going to trade away picks for futures now. We're going to win with Doughty and Kopitar. Or do you see them sticking pat, moving up and down the round? Where do you see this going, Joe?
I think the pick stays. Like, I don't think they're trading. The only thing I can see them, you know, the Kings have traded up before in the draft. Maybe that's something that they look to do if they see a player they like. But in terms of trading this pick for a trade for the NHL, I don't know. I don't know if I see that. I don't
know. You don't see a PLD trade?
Because I don't know that it's enough. I don't know that that I guess it's possible, but I'm expecting them to make the selection or even trade up. I can see both of those, but I don't know that this is a piece that's that integral to a deal to come. I don't know. That's my opinion.
What do you think, Russ?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, the Kings have always kind of wanted to have these. I mean, when you trade away the first round pick and then you trade away the second round pick of the same draft, that you're kind of just getting away from the draft at that point. And I'm sure the Kings have some players in mind at 54. So I would just imagine that this pick ends up staying.
And they don't have a second next year, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, that was in the Philly trade, right?
Right. So, you know, you're starting, and this is one of the things where I know everybody was doing cartwheels about the trade, but, you know, you lost assets to deal for actual players and actual warm bodies by doing this. So, unfortunately, you know, they've lost a pretty big asset to where maybe Randon, if they did have next year's, then maybe this one could be on the table, I guess. But I don't know. As Russ said, they've dealt some pick capital here. I kind of expect and hope they deal their 24 first, because again, they do kind of have to make a run here if they want to do so. So that could be something that costs.
I think I hope they stay, because I think that you look, the biggest downside, well, obviously the two cups are positive, but the downside was it took a long time to reimburse those talent. And this second obviously isn't going to be an impact this year or next year or even the year after, but you got to have that flow of or influx of positive talent. And you look at the guys that we're going to be talking about later, you know, all our draft cut crushes, those could be guys that would be making a difference in the 2026, 2027 year, where we fully expect the Kings to be competing for a cup. Maybe we trade those guys away to get a star player or a difference maker. So I hope they make this pick, but do you think Davo comes in here? Do you think that Blake makes a trade to get another second to where we replenish even more? Or do you think AI or VA, which we talked about last week, which one are they going to be trading more? Do you think they're going to be a part of a piece to get a guy that's right now instead of a future pick?
I guess I think a pick's possible here just because we've talked at length about they're going to still need to move some money. I think it's, especially if they're going to bring in somebody of impact, and perhaps somebody like Iafallo or Arvidsson can net you a second or third round pick. I think that's a possibility.
Yeah, definitely. That's kind of what I was thinking too. I mean, if you're looking to kind of figure out some more cap space and create some more room, Arvidsson could probably net you a second round pick. I don't see him netting a first, but second rounder easily. I mean, one year left, very productive player. Would be tough to lose, obviously, but if you're looking to shed some salary cap and maybe sign a goaltender or maybe trade for a player, I mean, that's definitely a piece I'd look to trading. But I'm kind of with Joe here. I wouldn't be surprised if you maybe see the Kings maybe trade up in this draft, maybe tie some picks together and just move up a couple spots, something crazy, not try to get in the first or anything. But, I mean, this is a deep draft. This has been known to be one of the best drafts in quite some time. So I think you can still get a good quality player in the 40s and 50s. So I'd be surprised if the Kings end up trading away just to kind of move back or move away from the second round at all.
If Tanner Melendick slips to round two.
Before we get into the players there, Joe.
One of mine. I was just throwing it out there.
Hold your horses there, my man. let's get into this prospect pool, because we've been winning, you know, hockey games. A lot of hockey games have been won by the LA Kings, and we haven't been really talking about the prospect pool. Let's get to the positive before the negative. Where is this prospect pool really, really advancing or really, you know, really excelling in that pool? What do you think, Russ?
Yeah, I think the forward group is actually looking pretty strong. We haven't really seen any players pan out, I guess, from the top couple rounds that have been drafted so far in the NHL. But, I mean, you got a lot of good stuff percolating down the AHL. I mean, Akil Thomas, unfortunately, had his shoulder injury this past year, so he wasn't able to expand on his development. But still got high hopes for him. Very talented player, all-around type of player. Arthur Kaliev obviously made some strides in the NHL, but it's been up and down, but I'm still high hopes for him. Not to mention Laferriere, Chromiak. I mean, the names, you can go on and on with the amount of wingers and scores that the Kings have in the pipeline. So I think they're pretty solid down that group.
What do you think? What do you think the positive is in the prospect pool there, Joe?
No, I would agree. I think you look at the forward group, you know, you've got a couple that have graduated to the NHL already with Byfield, Vilardi, Kaliev, Kupari has, you know, kind of established himself as an NHLer, I would say, at this point. And then when you look, as Russ said, in Ontario, you've got Laferriere's coming, Chromiak, Pennelly. It's a really exciting group. Neither of us has mentioned Samuel Fagimo yet, who is a pretty good goal scorer in his own right in the AHL, and he's gotten his feet wet in the NHL a little bit. So, you know, I think you look at they've got a pretty good crop of forwards. You know, will one of them, two of them, how many, if any, you know, actually kind of, you know, bust out into something? You know, we talked about another strength for the longest time being their right defense. Obviously, they've made a couple of trades here, moving away from Brock Faber and Helge Granz over the last couple of years, but that's still extremely strong just because of the top end, right, with Clark and Spence. It's thin after that, and thin by thin, it means like there's zero after that, but those two are so good. And no disrespect to Durzi, obviously, he's in the NHL, established himself as an NHL player, so, you know, but that's still really impressive on the right side too. So it may not be as plentiful as it used to be, or as the forward group perhaps, but it's still really strong.
When two of your top prospects are right shot defensemen, there's not as much there in terms of quantity, but the quality is definitely there. So it's not really a position of need at this moment.
Yeah, I'm not going to piggyback on the Clark train, because you know that I'm the conductor. So we'll go a different direction here. But I think the elite scoring for the Kings in the prospect pool is a really high point. You look at Samuel Fagimo, you look at Pennelly. It's just really high end there, and Chromiak. You have a lot of goal scorers that are right at the AHL or NHL level that could come in. So it makes you feel good about maybe losing a Victor Arvidsson. Makes you feel good about, hey, like there's a guys that could potentially come into this. I mean, Pennelly was a 50-plus goal scorer, right? Point-per-game player. Chromiak just lighting the lamp. Like everybody on Twitter was doing Chromiak highlights. And don't even get me started on Fagimo, where he's presence been, and his one defensive acumen is phenomenal, but he's able to have that elite wrist shot within the buttons. I just think that's a really highlight for the prospect pool there.
Yeah, and I think, like, I don't remember where I read this, that the Kings were maybe a little thin on the wings. I actually think that they're okay on the wings, especially when I look at the NHL, the young players, at least right now. Again, Vilardi is moved to the wing. I'm assuming that's permanent, but you never know. I guess we'll see what the future holds for Vilardi, but
I think that's just where they're drafted at, right? Kupari drafted center. Turcotte was a center. Byfield was a center. Vilardi was a center. Pennelly was a center. Like, I think like this is just draft acumen that, oh, these guys are going to be centers. But really, if you look at their style of play, right, Byfield did well on the wing. Yeah. Turcotte has done well on the wing. Kupari's done well on the wing. Like, these guys are adaptable.
Right, and that's what I want to see. What of these guys, which of these guys? Because really, I think at this point, I think Pennelly's really the only true center. Well, maybe Hughes, I guess, too. He's a little bit further away. But, you know, Turcotte, I don't know what to make of him at this point. I don't know what position he plays. I just want him to play. So it's hard to
really... I think he's a third-line center. I think he's a top six winger. Like, I think he adds that dirtiness that a line needs. But to drive a line, he's probably a third-line player.
I can see that. So, but which of these guys can Pennelly stick at center and be an impactful, you know, middle six type of center, right? So we'll see. But I think we're in agreement that the forward group is, I still think, well, it's a strong point, is deep. It's deep. I don't know if how elite it is. It's deep, though, right?
Yeah. No, agreed. And I kind of like, I'm not one to be worried about players transitioning from center to wing. I'd actually almost prefer draft maybe more centers just so you can have that experience at the faceoff dot and maybe a little bit more responsibility defensively. Because I think the transition from center to wing is a lot easier than it would be from a wing to a center position. So I'm not too worried about that whole aspect. But yeah, I agree. I agree with Joe. It's just you got a lot of prospects that can fill those needs in terms of scoring, like you mentioned, Randon too. We haven't even mentioned a player like Kenny Connors, who played for USA at the World Juniors. He looks pretty good. Sammy Hellenius, also another center, big boy center. We haven't even seen Casper Simontaiva over here in North America. Atu Jamson, another seventh round pick. So, I mean, I can go on and on. These are, but it's almost like we're in this like past this honeymoon phase of the Kings prospect pool, though, right? I mean, we've heard so much about some of these players and seen the highlights and
Simon Tybalt for me the most. Like I've been waiting for this kid to break
myself
out.
Myself included. You know? You see him at the World Juniors and the way he performs, he just has a knack for scoring goals. He's just like I compared him to like a prairie dog that just pops up in, out of these holes and just finds pucks and puts in the back of the net. But for how small he is too, it's great. So I'm really excited to see, because there's reports that he's going to be over here for dev camp. So I'm really excited to watch Simontaiva. Obviously Jamson was over here last year too. There's a lot to like. Leferrier's here. So I'm excited with the forward group. I just wonder if, maybe there's a little bit more of a need on the defensive side and maybe in goal and net too.
Before we get to the negatives, I gotta highlight this. Mama McMahon coming in the chat. Hey boys, love listening to the podcast. Mama J in the chat. That's my mom. Thank you for always listening. Appreciate you.
Appreciate it.
Love it.
Let's get into the negatives here. I mean, we don't want to harp on too much of this, but I think the negative is obviously the defensive core, right? We trade all these guys away. There's no left shot D. There's no right shot D in the defensive, you know, core outside, you know, the Spences and the Clarks, but it's not as thick as it used to be. Maybe I'm speaking for myself, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. It's funny because, man, over these last like few months or maybe just ever since he's been drafted, I keep trying to figure out what is going on with Kirill Kursanov. I just need to know what that guy's doing, because when he was drafted, I remember Yannetti said that he thought he could play at the AHL at that time. So ever since that was said, it almost like piqued my interest. I'm like, okay, I need to see how this player performs. And obviously what we touched on the whole thing with Russia and whatnot. It's been hard to try to kind of get a grasp on everything and even find highlights of what he's been doing. I know he got traded from, I think it's the St. Petersburg team or SKA or whatever it is. Over to Vityaz, and I'm probably butchering the name, but yeah, so he's obviously a young player, was part of the World Junior team a couple years ago, and I know they haven't been involved in the tournament in a few years, but yeah, that's a player that I'd love to learn a little bit more about. Obviously, the left side is probably more of a need, and that's exactly what he plays, so but yeah, you hit it right on the head, Randy. I mean, I'm sure there's some more of a need, and maybe could fill up that side of the defense a little bit more.
Yeah, the lefty and goaltending are the two glaring needs, I would say. One of which I think you can fill at various spots, be it college free agents or deep in drafts. That's the goaltender. But they need to start getting some players to fill out that left defense. I mean, and players of all sorts, whether they're, you know, two-way defensemen, defensive defensemen, offensive defensemen, they just need some bodies back there because they really don't have many prospects on the left side of the D. And we can, it's been a pain point and a topic of conversation for years. I think it was before the season that Scott Wheeler did his of the Athletic his prospect pool rankings. There's 15 players ranked here. There's one left shot D, and that's Toby Bjornfoot. And I don't know. We've talked at length about Bjornfoot on this podcast. I just don't know that he's a NHL defenseman. Maybe he's a fringe, you know, 6-7 guy. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that. That's why Tanner Melendick. I had to get too ahead of myself, Randy. I was so excited about him. But it looks like he's.
So you should have chosen him as one of your prospects. Guys, right?
I guess so. But he's gonna go too high but listen, if they trade up, that's my guy, because he's a left-handed, but is he fun to watch? Just
So my thing with Bjornfort is this. Let's, before we get back to the draft, elite skating. Like he can move both sides. Yeah.
Oh, elite skating. Call it elite.
I would say it is. He's very sound in his skating. Maybe not from an offensive standpoint, but he's never going to get beat from his feet. He's not that big. He doesn't use his skating. He doesn't use his size. I mean, he's 6 foot or whatever, but to his advantage, like he's just playing in between. Like his entire career has been in flux. He's not an offensive guy. Like you watch him in for Sweden, he's like an offensive guy. And then he comes back to the Kings and he's a defensive guy. And then he goes to the AHL, he's an offensive guy. Like he's never the same player consistently. And I think that's what the Kings need. You need consistency. T-Mac wants consistency from you. And he's not that guy. And I think that Bjornfort has the skating to be an NHL player. But is he going to be that type of decision maker where he's going to be a persona on the ice? I don't think so. Not yet.
Bjornfort, yeah, he's almost like the Kings of the early 2022-23 Kings that just doesn't have an identity. He doesn't know what type of player he is, right? And I mean, you watch Bjornfort and you see, I agree, Randy, and you see him do all these crazy offensive plays on certain games, but the defense is lacking, and then some games he's playing pretty good defensively, he just doesn't make the right decisions offensively. But yeah, I agree too, Randy, in terms of his skating ability, I think it's really good. It's just his IQ is just not there. I mean, there's been times I watch him play and he just looks lost out there on the ice and he just doesn't know where to be. And I don't know, maybe that's just a young player still developing. I'm obviously not going to give up on him, mm-hmm. but I just would like to see him establish what his role and what type of player he's going to be on the team.
I don't think it's IQ. I think it's his identity, right? Like he has enough offensive acumen to be a 30-point player in the NHL, but he doesn't consistently do anything right. Like he's there. But I think his skating and IQ is top notch. I just don't think he ever gives himself to one role, right?
Yeah, and I think that's what makes, you know, the other left shot defenseman that gets talked about a lot, and I'm a big fan of, is Jacob Movarari. I think the reason why he can be successful and can spot in more seamlessly is because he knows exactly who he is. There's no he knows what he is. He's a defensive defenseman. He's going to close gaps. He's good first puck or first pass out of the zone. Like he's very, very simple, but he plays within it. He knows that. And I think Bjornfort, as you mentioned, kind of depending on the level where he is, he can be a different type of player. And he just, what sucked for Bjornfort is him starting so young and such a big role in the NHL. I don't think that helped him. And yeah, I agree. Like, I'm not giving up on him because he is young, but boy, I haven't seen a thing that tells me that guy's ready for a playoff series against the Oilers. Like, you know, right? And when I look at it that way, you put it in that context,
but you look at this, like, is that because of, like, we'll go, like, Higgenny saying, Bjornfort Movarari, right? We're all ready for the LD role, LD3. I look at Movarari, and I'm like, hey, I know what he is. He's not going to make a mistake. He's going to be defensively sound. He's going to have good zone exits.
He has his limitations.
He's never going to be an offensive juggernaut. But if you pair him with Durzi on the right side or Spence or Clark, like he's going to perform in what he does. With Bjornfort, I don't know what you're getting. I really don't. Like you have the guy that does a 360 backflip goal where he broke every single defenseman in the AHL. And then you have a guy getting beat routinely in the NHL. Like you don't know what he is.
Yeah.
Like he has all the abilities. He just has no identity, which Bjorn, I mean, I don't know about you guys. I'd rather have a guy that has an identity and knows exactly what he is. And I can expect that from a night in, night out versus a guy that has potential, quote unquote.
Which is probably surprising coming from me that I'm a Movarari fan because he's kind of like the opposite of the defenseman that I generally like. But there's something about how much you can see him, how he's just this good thinker on the ice. Like you can see that when you watch him play. It's like this guy doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes. He knows he's not a great skater, but he can think very fast. He can think a heck of a lot faster than his feet. So I think that's what helps him out. And it's just, yeah, I don't know what we've seen from Bjornfoot to say, yeah, let's get hit. We're a team that's looking to contend for a Stanley Cup. We want Tobias Bjornfoot on our roster. I don't see that. I'm not giving up. Like the rest said, like he's still very, very young, but he, to me, needs more time in Ontario.
I see a lot of Rob Scuderi in Moviari's game. It's just quiet on the ice. Mm-hmm. You're not going to notice him really at all, but that's probably a good thing, right? I mean, that's a way to win over Kings fans there, Russ.
Rob Scuderi is a Kings favorite.
Yeah, I mean, every time, I don't know, it was just kind of a little baffling at times where Moviari didn't get more playing time than I would have expected. But yeah. maybe that's why all this talk about us maybe looking for a little bit more of a well-rounded type of player. Maybe that's the player that the Kings were looking for at times. But I mean, when there were games that they were playing Edler over pretty much anybody, I guess.
Well, I think that's the downside, I suppose, with the Edler deal. It was cheap. I understood it. I think we kind of praised it, but it blocks, you know, a Moviari. Mm-hmm. And again, listen, full like disclosure, I get it. I'm not there. I'm not on the staff. Maybe they just said, guys, we know Moviari is not ready to play 60 games in the NHL. And if that was their decision, then that's why they brought Edler back. And evidently that's what it was.
Edler was garbage, straight trash.
Well, but boy, that's the thing. Like, was he ready to where you couldn't even spot him here and there? I would
take the average. I would take the low end of Mavari's game, the worst Mavari game that you've ever seen, versus the average of Edler last season. And that's not even close. Edler was so trash. And that's a harsh word. I thought, hey, that's a great signing. $775K mm-hmm. for a guy. He just didn't have it this season. And
they just overplayed him. They overplayed him. It was
a lot of games.
Yeah. Maybe that's recency bias because of the fact that the playoffs, but that, I mean, and right here, this, and Higeni says Mata, right? Like you had Mata, who was a player that everybody hated, but he was solid. He was solid for the team.
Perfectly fine moving on from Mata.
No, I was too, but I'm just saying, like, he was a solid player. As much as bad publicity as he got, Edler wasn't solid for the team.
I don't think he was as bad as you're making out to be. But he, to your point, he was not good, and he certainly wasn't good consistently.
I don't even think he was worth $775K. I would have rather not signed him and signed somebody else.
Fair enough.
Well, let's get to the center, hoping to get what they got from him the year before, and it just
didn't work out.
Right.
I know.
Before we get to the next topic, Oakland together and Fisher out for all of Oakland A fans.
Respect to that. We'd be remiss if we didn't at least. I mean, I know the Kings have ignored the goaltending for the last how many years, but we should probably not ignore the goaltending in the system. It's obviously a problem, right? Now they got Portillo, yeah. But the goaltending. Do you see them targeting a goaltender in this draft? Obviously, I guess I don't know. Maybe there isn't a whole lot to talk about. We all know the goaltending is very thin in the system. I mean, you know my thoughts. I'm not even thinking goalie for the first few rounds here.
I think the bigger question is this. Do you think they sign a veteran goalie like they did with Copley last season to be that bridge, or do you think they roll with Portillo and Vallotta?
What, in the AHL? Oh, you mean to sign like a
AHL? Do you think they sign a bridge guy, or do you think they roll with Portillo or Vallotta?
I think they roll with those two. I think they're pretty confident. I would believe they're pretty confident in what they got in Vallotta. I mean, he showed pretty well last year, and I was a little disappointed. I mentioned a couple of times that he didn't get as many starts as he probably should have. So, I mean, Vallotta should be knocking on the door for NHL starts at this point. So if we're coming to that notion, then yeah, he should definitely be the number one guy in Ontario. And then, yeah, if you're looking for Portillo to look a little bit, get a little bit more playing time, then he should be the number two. I think that's a good split to have.
This would be
I think Peterson took away from that. That's why that's the point of the question.
Yeah.
Did he sign a guy, you know?
This would be his fourth season, fifth season, Vallotta?
Vallotta's his fourth season on the ring, yeah.
So
This will be his fifth season with the Rangers. Played 22 games in 1920.
He is a veteran. Like he's a young goalie. I get that, but he doesn't have to be 30 to be a veteran. You know, he's been around he's been there. He knows it. He gets it. He knows the road trips. He knows all the ins and outs that he can teach a young goalie like Portillo. So, like, I don't think they need to. I said the exact same thing last year, which is why I didn't think they needed Copley, but I was wrong about that too. So I would like to see them go with Villalta Portillo, but I don't know what their plans are. And, maybe they don't know that Portillo's ready for that type of a role to be instantly ready to go in the AHL. I don't know.
All right. So, Joe, your question was the draft. Obviously, the draft is going to be towards the bottom end of the goalie rotation. Do you think that David Hrenek or Ingram or Parikh, do you think they've shown enough to where we shouldn't draft a goalie this round, or are you open to the possibility of that?
Not in the second. And I don't know. Is Hrenek?
Is Hrenek he'll gone? Be in Europe. He's going to be in Europe next year.
Yeah. He went to Europe. And Parikh too. Is Parikh a free agent? Is that?
Yeah, they didn't sign him.
So it's
Juho Markkanen and Phoenix Kopyo, I think, are their only two goalies in the system. And then or Portillo and two, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Those three are the only three goalies in the system right now.
Yeah. That are actively signed. Yeah. That are actively
Vallelta's
signed.
Vallelta's an RFA, but yeah, those are the only three.
So it's
the fact that I thought these people are still here is the fact that they've shown that they haven't progressed. They've just been marinating in the mediocrity of our system.
And so I guess to
no offense to the Swamp Rabbit, still waiting for a jersey, please.
And full disclosure, like I don't know as I don't know a lot about the goalies in this draft. I don't know where they're projected, where the top one's projected. I don't know, but I have zero interest in drafting a goalie.
In the 50s, actually, to be honest with you, Joe. So are you okay with them taking a goalie with their first pick?
No.
Okay.
Nope. That would be out of the norm for the Kings. They haven't drafted a goalie earlier than the third round since 2011. So that's not something that the Kings have ever looked at. Obviously, so you still had Jonathan Quick. You had Jonathan Quick in the system. You had other goaltenders around. But, yeah, I'm kind of with that. I think you just try to – hit the jackpot in the later rounds. And I think there's some goalies in the later rounds like I could see. I mean, there's a goalie out of Finland, Juho Jaktola, I think is his name, that I'm pretty impressed with. Plays in the Kalpa lead, the Finnish Elite League out there. And I think he'd be a good steal in the later rounds. But yeah, that's something that the Kings will probably most likely be addressing in this draft.
So let's get to the brass tacks here, everybody. Everybody in the chat, thank you for coming in. Get in here and let us know who your draft crushes are here in the second round, because Hockey Royalty is about to do that as well. Joe, I'm going to let you start. Who's your first draft crush for the second round for the Kings?
So, well, my true draft crush, I mentioned a couple of times, right, is Tanner Melendick. But I don't think he's going to make it all the way to the Kings. But if they trade up and you find the Kings have – acquired Tanner Melendick, just think of me, because I'm a huge fan of his. Anyways, I will stay on the left side of the D for my pick here, and that's Luca Cagnoni. He's out of the WHL, Portland Winterhawks defenseman. Not a big defenseman. He's 5'9", 5'10", depending on where you look, 180 pounds. But big minutes, plays in all situations. He can be his own breakout. Hell of a skater, definitely leans more of an offensive defenseman. And what I like the most, and what I was trying to figure out, and I want to give big stick taps to Scott Wheeler and Corey Priman. I look a lot at The Athletic and the reports that they do and the scouting reports that they do. They do a hell of a job. And what I was looking at is to try to find guys, because you're in the second round, so obviously the ceilings are not going to be the same as the ceilings of the guys drafted in the first round. So what I'm looking at is who can skate and who has a brain, who has a higher hockey IQ. And Luca Cagnoni checked both of these boxes. Really good skater, really good with the puck. He runs the power play in Portland, and he is considered not only one of the smartest defensemen, if not the smartest defenseman in the draft, but one of the smartest overall players in the draft. I love that at pick 54. I think the reason he's going at pick 54 is because he's 5'10". It reminds me a lot of Lane Hutson last year, although he's got, although Kenyoni's 20 pounds heavier than Hutson, but Hutson lit up.
Hutson was a paper bag.
Yeah, but he was over a point a game as a defenseman in college last year. So.
He was my draft crush.
Yep, that's true. So I would say he is my number one is Luca Kenyoni right now. Again, I love the skating and I love the brains.
Outside of the Italia bias,
I love the vowels.
I agree for Joe. Russ, where are you going with your first pick there?
Well, I have a real crush on a late first round player that is named Andrew Cristall. I mean, this is going to be a total. I don't think he's going to fall to the Kings at 54. I'm just saying I've seen some of the highlights, and if he does fall, this player, he's like Kevin Fiala. If you watch his highlights, he looks exactly like Kevin Fiala. Some of the stuff he does on the ice. But the other player I'm going to mention that is probably a little bit more of a reach too. But I've actually heard that the Kings have been scouting this player too. Is Theo Lindstein. The Swedish left shot defenseman played in the Swedish hockey league or hockey. Else, how do you? It's their secondary league out there in Sweden too.
The J20,
but yeah, no, it's the Allsvenskan. I can't even say that league's name.
We got to get 6 to 9.
Yeah, but yeah, he played in the SHL last year. Played 32 games there. Was the quarterback of their power play in the U18 team for Sweden. Then played in the Henrika Gretzky tournament and then had a 5-point game. In one of those games too. So it's funny because he's been known to be more of a defensive style player, but he does have a little bit of that offensive capability to his game. So he's defensive first from everything I've read, everything I've seen, but was not afraid to use his skating ability to kind of jump up into the rush. And he's got a pretty good shot too for a left shot defenseman. Hey, I mean, we'll probably be looking at a lot of these left shot defensemen that anybody that falls to that first 54th pick at round two to the Kings. I mean, those are all of the players we're going to be looking at because that certainly seems to be the type of player or even the position of need for the Kings. So Theo Lindstein is the player that I'm looking at.
Yeah, I think that you and I are on the same boat here with the left shot. I think it's not only the need for the Kings, I think it's a need for the prospect pool. I mean, you look at what's the Finnish player that just played for the Rain? Kim Nousiainen.
Kim Nousiainen.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, he's our only left shot D that's a prospect, right? So he's the only guy
Angus Booth is a left shot.
Mm-hmm.
Booth,
exactly. The only prospect that we have that's actually any good is Kim Nousiainen.
Hey, Jordan Spence was a fourth round pick too. And he was out of the queue.
All right. Well, if prove me wrong, there, Booth. Prove me wrong. The guy that I'm going with is Jakub Dvorak out of Chechnya. Podcast aficionado Corey Promen turned me on to this guy, talked to him and said, hey, what do you guys see the Kings drafting? And then he put it in his article within The Athletic. So I looked at it, did some research there. You know, he's out of Chechnya. He is 6'5", 203. Everybody likes that size there. But for me, it's just, you know, he's a guy that is, you know, he's played against older competition his entire life in the men's league, in the Chechnya league. He's a guy that plays like a boring style, but he's always dependable. He's not the fastest player in the ice. He's skating is so impressive, but it's not like alarming. Like he's not using it to his advantage on the offensive side of the ice, but he's doing it to get out of the way of players or moving it up to get the first outlet pass, you know, which I think that the Kings need. It's not always about offensive ability. You know, Brent Clark, my homeboy, my man, my G, can do that. You know, you just need a guy that is able to make that first outlet pass and get you up there. He's got a long stride. He's able to close gaps on pucks on the defensive angle. You know, his allows his teammates to transition, which I think you look at guys like you said, Kevin Fiala, and Victor Arvidsson's on the team at that point. Obviously, those are the Kings players now. He's not going to be playing for the Kings then, but maybe the prospect pool, right? You look at the guys like Pennelly or Alex Turcotte, if he gets Helly. Those are the guys that demand the center of the ice, and he's able to get that puck to those players. So he has that he's able to exploit the explosiveness of his teammates. By those stretch passes, by being able to guard the puck in the defensive zone and make sure that he can and move out. I think he's a very confident player. And I just think he needs to demand the puck more consistently because of the fact that he is able to make those outlet passes. So that's the guy that I'm really looking for. I think you see him in the range of anywhere between you look at NHL Central Scouting has the 15th overall skater for international, and then he's sitting anywhere between 52 to 64. So Jakub Dvorak is my dude.
I like it.
Yeah, I like
so
it.
Joe, where are we? Go ahead.
Oh, also just want to hit. I know Trapper Nine has mentioned we haven't mentioned Cole Krieger is also a left shot defenseman who was signed as a free agent. Played a couple games with the Rain last year. Good skater. See how he kind of progresses on Terry Rain. So I just wanted to mention he's another left shot defenseman in the system as well.
All right, Joe.
I am going to go back to Sweden for a centerman, Felix Nilsson. He played out of the J20 as a 17-year-old, and he had 41 points in 36 games. He actually just turned 18 today, as a matter of fact, on June 22nd. Really, he's 6'1", 180, so he's got a little bit more to grow. He's not a monster in terms of he's not like an Andrei Kopitar 6'4", but he'll thicken out a little bit more, which I think will help him. But in the video that I watched of him, just a really well-rounded player in both ends of the ice, really good on the puck. I mean, when he has the puck, he is driving play. He's the one that's just he's distributing pucks. He's a really good passer. Really good in the offensive zone, especially. I get some, like, I don't know. I haven't seen, obviously, a ton of him, but from the video that I did watch, I get some, like, Sam Reinhart vibes where he's a very cerebral type of player, really good thinker, good shooter, underrated passer. Like, I think he's just a well-rounded type of centerman that I don't know that he's got the ceiling of, like, a 1C. Otherwise, he'd be going in the first round. But I could see him settling into a middle six role if he hits as a centerman. So Felix Nilsson out of Sweden.
I like it. He was in my top five to pick. I really like that pick there for you, Joe. Russell, where are you going with your second?
So my first one was probably somebody that might not fall to the Kings in Lindstein. Could end up being a first round pick. But this player I'm going to mention is probably more of a reach at the 54th pick. And it's a name that I'm sure a lot of Kings fans might recognize. And that's I'm trying to get the attack, keep the Italian-ness going. I know, Joe, you're going to appreciate this, but I'm going to go with Luca Pinelli. Let's get the brothers going here. I mean, Luca Pinelli, obviously Francesco Pinelli's brother, played the Ottawa 67s in the OHL. Dude, 63 points in 67 games. I mean, this is a player that I don't know. Maybe it's just more because you got the brother alongside of it. You got a little bit of camaraderie there. Maybe you can grow a little chemistry with those two together. But yeah, I mean, I think this is also a player. I mean, he's a little undersized. I think he's only 5'9". Mm-hmm. But left shot forward, plays a little bit tenacity, had 18 points in 11 playoff games for the 67. So I don't know. Some of the stuff I watched with Pinelli, I've been pretty impressed, and I think that's somebody maybe you can see going in the second round. But hey, maybe he falls in the third round, and the Kings get another quality player there.
Have you seen the rumors that the Panthers want to bring in the Tkachuk brothers together and deal away Barkov?
That would be crazy. That would be – I think Barkov's a better player than Brady, but yeah. I understand it. If you're trying to create the Bash brothers of the Tkachuks, that would be really fun, actually. Thinking about it,
it would be fun.
Maybe we have that in LA. I like it. Pinelli was a top pick for mine too, a little less down the line. So I have this draft crush of mine, and it took me a while. It took me a long time today, you know, having a few beers, having a few barbecue sandwiches as we do in Texas. And I really thought that the Kings prospect pool and the Kings lineup lacks physicality in a positive nature. And everybody's like, oh, we need size. We need this. We need big guys that are able to hit. I don't think that's the case. I think we need grit. I think we need sandpaper. I think we need the guys that are willing to spit in your face and take a 5-minute penalty, fight guys 40 pounds heavier than you. And the guy that I like who has skill and grit is Callan Lind. So this guy right here, Scott Wheeler, friend of the podcast, had him as the highest motor in the draft. Guy that never quits. So that's what I like to see first off. You look at the rankings here, 23rd, 37, 49, 64, 62. He's all over that late first, early second round, late second round. But he's out of the WHL, 6 foot, 155 when he was in the WHL. But he has room to grow there. But he's just a nuisance. He's going over there, two-way winger. He's defensively sound for his size. Not giving up a lot of plays. Got great speed. Ain't afraid to crash the net. Anytime he gets the puck, he's taking it to the net. He's not afraid to mix it up, which I like that kind of play. Who does that remind you of? Blake Lizotte, except for he's on the wing. He's getting it done all the time on the offensive side of the puck in the WHL, and he's fighting guys that are over 3 inches taller and 40 pounds heavier. In the OHL All-Star game, he did that. In the All-Star game, you're never fighting people. He's fighting people over there. So he's got that panache, that skill, that grit. And I think that the prospect pool needs that. I think the Kings need that. And I think this is a player that can maybe make some headway maybe 3-4 years down the line that can really drive some edge in the middle six of the team. You look at what we thought, or I thought, Grunstrom could be for the Kings as a nuisance. Tonka was a guy that was always hitting people, that was able to score. He had one of the highest shooting percentages on the Kings. Even this year, he didn't really have that consistency. If Kalen Lynn can do that on a consistent level, you're looking at when the Kings are making waves, he's a guy that can interject himself and be a nuisance in the middle six and still have that scoring ability. Quote from Stephen Ellis of the Daily Faceoff: Lind is such an intriguing player. He's got the skill to play with anybody and knows how to put a ton of points on the board, but few players hit like he does. He targets and he loves to challenge anybody who will take him on. Also, Mitch Savard of FC Hockey: Lind's the type of player you hate to play against, but love to have him on your team. Who does that sound with? The Tkachuk brothers right there. That's the guy that I'm talking about. He plays in-your-face type of game, forechecks hard, finishes every check that's possible, hits anybody that's in his way, and loves to be in front of the net and get under people's skin. That's my player of this draft. And if the Kings walk away with this guy in the second, you will not be disappointed. Mic drop.
That's fantastic. I'm going to add to that, actually, because I'm looking at the Wheeler's rankings, and Wheeler has him ranked at 62, so right in that range. And the first sentence: Lind is a fearless, physical, hardworking forward who regularly lays big, clean hits and never stops coming. Like, it is like, just as you said, Randy, this is a guy that, you know, he is the type of guy that, and again, I don't know him at all, I don't know him personally, anything like that. But if generally speaking, a guy that plays like that, he's a fantastic guy to have in the locker room. He's a great guy to have on the bench and like just around and in the organization. So I, you know, it's not necessarily always my cup of tea, Randon, but hey, he could be a nice guy to have in this organization. That's for sure. And then hey, because he's got some talent, hey, you never know. Maybe he pops in middle six.
I mean, what prospect in the Kings system right now do you think about that? I mean, I can't think of a player that kind of fits that fold. Yeah, I mean, someone just mentioned right now in our chat, that seems like a Kyle Clifford kind of draft pick, right? I mean, Clifford didn't really have that offensive style to his game, but when you drafted Clifford, everybody knew. I mean, like, I think the first highlights you saw from Clifford were him fighting people. So it's like, and that seems like the same kind of player, but, and it's funny because you mentioned it. I mean, I was looking him up too. It's 155 pounds. That's pretty light, but I'm glad he's able to drop the mitts and not afraid at all.
And he's duking it out with people that are over 200 pounds. He's not afraid to fight. He's not afraid to get in there and mix it up. I you look at a Marshawn Light type player to where he's very good with the puck. He's got great hands. He's around the net. And all you need is a guy that's willing to get in the center of the ice.
Yep.
And clean up the dirty pucks. That's all you need from him. And he's not afraid to mix it up. I think he'll be a great middle six type guy at the peak of his career. And worst case scenario, he's a guy that's going to mix it up that has skill on the fourth line. You mistake guys on the fourth line like McDermott and everything like that for Colorado. Like, yeah, he's a big player and he was a positive for that team, but he didn't have any offensive acumen. Kalen Lind has that offensive acumen. You watch a lot of his highlights, he'll get in the dirty areas and then he'll backpedal into the open areas of the ice right on the dots and bury one-timers from behind the net. So I this is my draft crush. It's very much the guy that I want to see be drafted by the Kings. And if Rob Blake had any sense, he would listen to this podcast and dial up the tape, because man, like I'm at a rogue barbecue joint here in Texas, but I saw what I saw, and I think he's an excellent player.
One other name I'll throw out there that I started to really like, and I really enjoyed watching and reading about him and watching clips and watching video of him, and this Riley Height. Only reason I didn't include him as one of my top two is because I think he's just going to go too high. I think he's going to probably be in the late first. But Corey Pronman has been the low man on him. Corey Pronman has had him in the 50s, if I'm not mistaken, maybe even pushing 60. I think at his latest update, he had him at 49. So still in that range. And if the Kings walk away with a Riley Height, really high skilled forward, really skilled forward. So that's just another name I'll throw out there.
Yeah, Riley Height was called a cannonball in the draft thing that I watched. And I really thought about him. I've been looking for what I took away from this playoffs, and maybe you guys disagree, is that the NHL needs more Tkachuks in this league. We went way too far in the league of skill with the Austin Matthews and McDavid's, and there is still a part of the NHL for that game. But the best player in the playoffs was Matthew Tkachuk, and it's not even arguable in my opinion. And you look at what he brought to the team with a broken sternum in the playoffs. Yeah, their team lost, but he was scoring goals. He was getting in people's faces. He was chewing his mouthpiece irritably to me, even watching. And they weren't even playing the Kings, but he was a nuisance and he was a scorer. And I think there's still a place in this league for that type of player. And I think the NHL wants to get away from that, because all they talk about is the McDavids and the McKinnons, when I love Nathan McKinnon. But I think they talk about those types of players. They don't talk about the Tkachuks until it's the only team left over. He's just that dude. And I was looking for a guy. I spent 8 hours looking for a guy that I thought had some sort of skill and then that buzz, that energy, that nuisance. And it was hard to find. And I don't even think Kalyn Lind might be that type of player, because he's not a top 10 pick, but it's just such a niche skill set to have.
But what I think would be a mistake is, for it's one thing for you to go looking for it, right? You say, hey, as a fan, as somebody who's doing the pod, like, I want to find somebody that's this type of guy, but GMs can go look for it. But I think it's a mistake to go and try to draft for that, because let's not forget how good of a hockey player Matthew Tkachuk is. Like, he has that innate, that aggressiveness to him, that sandpaper to him. That's just him. That's his, the Tkachuk family, frankly. But they're also incredibly talented players. Like,
he's a unicorn.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So you can't go find those guys. You can't just say, go find me a Matthew Tkachuk. Like, the player that you mentioned, Randon, it seems like he's a fourth line guy ceiling. You don't draft that. You know, I don't know. Like, I think GMs would be making a mistake to go, unless you're talking maybe in like a middle round, fourth, fifth, and say, you know what, let's take a shot on this guy. He's got the right mindset. He's the right attitude. He's got that, and maybe if his skill set clicks, he can be that. Not Matthew Tkachuk, but like of that mold. But boy, I like, it's the same reason why I think teams are going to pay a crap ton of money for Ivan Barbashev and they're going to regret it in a year. Like, teams I just think that there's a little too much recency bias at times when it comes to playoffs. I mean, I get it, but I think a player like, I mean, Gudas is not a free agent, but if Gudas was a free agent, if Barbashev is going to, I feel like they're going to get overpaid. I think they're going to get too much money based on a really, really short run of high intensity hockey. And they did, they did fine, but like, what about the rest of it? You know, I don't know. It's I get it.
It's not about the Kings right now for me. It's about their prospect pool, and there's nobody tough in their prospect pool.
And it's a good, that's a really good observation, I think, by you, and that they really, I mean, the one that had been down there that you could say, like Jacob Doty would drop the gloves all the time, and you know, Hellenius will get after it a little bit.
Is he a fighter? Really? Like, he's just big.
Hellenius, yeah, he dropped the gloves quite a bit. We'd have to talk to Kyle a little bit because he's our rain expert. But yeah, he turned it out, actually quite surprised. He turned into quite the scrapper, which
his,
I mean,
dad was,
I guess I guess I shouldn't be surprised. He's just a huge mountain of a man. But I mean, yeah, if he can kind of grow a little bit of that skill set along with the size he has, I'm curious to see what Hellenius turns to. But it's funny because what's usually the discussion with drafts? I mean, this is just any draft, right? It's what do you go for? Do you go for drafting the best player available, mm-hmm. or do you go for drafting position of need? And this discussion, it's almost like you're drafting
best player available.
Yeah, but this discussion, it's almost like you're drafting the skill set of need, right? And in terms of just looking for that physical type of player. But I agree with you, Brandon. I mean, we're missing that in the prospect pool. We're missing that kind of pest. And I wonder if it is, I agree with you too, Joe, it's just like, I've heard it in other podcasts too, is you wonder if teams are now just all looking for that Matthew Tkachuk type of player. But if you go out just trying to go find that type of player, they don't just grow on trees. I mean, Matthew Tkachuk, this is a player that we haven't really seen in the NHL probably since his dad, right? That's not the type of NHL that we're watching. And I do wonder if maybe the Kings did kind of gravitate a little bit too far to that skill-wise type of style of play. I mean, you look at their roster. I mean, Trevor Moore, Victor Arvidsson, a lot of other players that are just maybe more on the smaller side, but maybe don't have that size to it. I mean, they went away from those cup runs of just big, heavy bodies of the Jordan Nolans and the Dwight Kings and all those type of players over to just more of a strong speed transition game, because that was a lot of what the management talked about. But now it's like almost like, okay, well, where's the size aspect that Kings fans are looking for? And I don't know if maybe it's something that they need to look at, but I understand that conversation is starting to have a little bit more.
You look at Iannetti and I've listened to a lot of his podcasts, and when you're drafting, I mean, we're talking about the second round, but second round or later or third round or later is all about, it's all about elite traits. And not saying that Kalyn Lind is elite in anything besides being an absolute a-hole on the ice, but that's something the Kings don't have in the prospect pool. They don't have any guys that are just a nuisance and that are willing to grind, an absolute menace on the forecheck, in the backcheck, in the paycheck, and getting in people's faces and fighting when you shouldn't be a fighter. Like, he's not a guy that's 6'4", right? He's 6'1", 155, like, but he's in everybody's face. And I look at it this way, and you're right, Russ. Everybody is like, hey, what do the Kings need? And we should draft that. But those players aren't going to be there for a couple of years. So what is our prospect pool need? We already said it. Like, they are dominant in the scoring. They're dominant in the forward. They're missing defense, and they're missing physicality in a part of how they play, not with size. And that was the biggest thing that all of us thought that the trade deadline, we just need a big defenseman because he's big and he's automatically going to play with physicality because he's big. That's not the case. Pau Gasol, right, for your LA Lakers. Huge dude, offensive acumen. He's a gentle giant out there. Did not go under the boards, didn't do anything defensively. He was a great shooter, great passer, offensive acumen, but he was tall and big, right? So, like, that's where my thought process is here, is that where is the prospect pool missing talent? And for me, it's the physicality. For me, it's the ratness. For me, it's the getting to the boards, getting to the crease and creating havoc. And I don't think we have a player like Kalyn Lind, and that's why he was my draft crush.
But you know what's funny is the player you're describing is everything we all thought Alex Turcotte would be. That's Alex Turcotte, but he just hasn't been healthy. I mean,
if Turcotte can be healthy, then we have two of them. So
exactly, he was supposed to be Jonathan Toews, but with a little bit more aggressiveness to his game, he just hasn't been healthy. And you watch him play, He's not afraid to get mixed it up, no. Get into the corners,
go to the hurt.
And that's, yeah, exactly. That's kind of what has caused him to be hurt all this time. But I don't know. I hope to see a little bit more from, I don't want to say a little bit more, but I just hope to see Turcotte healthy. And I want to be proven wrong. I bag on Turcotte all the time. And it, maybe it is a little too harsh on the player just because of his health history. But I just want to be proven wrong. I want to see that player that the Kings saw in him, that a lot of the draft prospects saw in him to be. I mean, this is a player that was drafted fifth overall, and that was because a lot of experts had him in the top five of his draft class. So, I mean, we'll see if maybe he can be that type of player that the Kings are missing in their prospect pool that brings that tenacity and that aggressiveness to the game.
I appreciate it. I acknowledge it as something that's missing. I don't want to draft it in the second round. Although, in fairness, like, this is a player who has talent too. He's ranked, yeah, in this area. So that, in fairness, like, he is ranked in that area. But with something,
no, I want a guy with offensive acumen that has, sure, this. Like, when you, yeah, listen to draft like analysis for all these players, it's like, oh, he's got offensive skill set. He's got great hands. He can get to this area. With Kalen Lynn, it's like, he F's people's up. Like, he's in everybody's face. And then, yeah, he can score too. Like,
yeah,
the part of the analysis is about his defensive game, about his tenacity, about his forechecking. And then they're like, oh, yeah, he can score as well. Where everybody else in that range that I read was all about, hey, like, this guy can score sometimes, but he's not consistent. Like, that's what stood out for me, is like, hey, this guy can score. But let's put that aside, because this guy can, you know, and like, I guess, I mean, I'm dragging everybody down a path for Kalen Lynn, which is the point of this whole podcast for me, apparently. But I just think, like, the Kings don't have that. I firmly believe Trevor Moore's overrated. I think he's overpaid. I think that Victor Arvidsson's going to leave, and he's nothing but, he's doesn't have the physicality, but he has that ratness and that he's always on the puck. And the Kings are going to miss that. There's no player if like that without Victor Arvidsson. And so, obviously, Kalen Lynn isn't going to be that guy, but where does that guy seep into the prospect pool right away? I don't know. I'm waiting for that type of guy. Maybe I'm just announced. This is my love letter to Matthew Tkachuk, that he's my favorite player. Maybe that's
it. The one thing I did like that you said to Randon was, you know, when you're looking for these players, especially in the second round and the later rounds, because, you know, first round guys, especially depending on where they are, these are probably pretty high ceiling guys. They're less so in the second and the later rounds, because there's going to be some flaws in their game, which is a reason they're not going in the first. But who are the guys that have, you mentioned, those elite traits? And that's exactly where I landed with Luca Cagnoni, where he can skate really, really well. He is graded as arguably one of the smartest players in this draft. And when I look at those two things, how well he skates, how well he moves the puck, his offensive instincts, and how smart he is considered by multiple people in the draft. Again, smartest defenseman in the draft, are pushing top five smartest players in the draft. And when you're getting that at 54, if, you know, obviously if he were to go to 54, that's, I'm along those same wavelengths, Randon. It's like, I'm looking for those high-end traits in that round to say, you know what, if he's got these couple of things, that's going to pop. And the one thing with Cagnoni, we've seen Yannetti in the past, if I'm not mistaken, really lean into hockey IQ as much as, yeah, anyone. So if Cagnoni's there, I wouldn't be surprised to see him be somebody that's a target for the Kings if, you know, if past is precedent.
They lean into hockey IQ and leadership. If you were a captain or assistant captain, probably going to be drafted by the Kings.
Or a Swede, which is why I went with Cagnoni and Felix Nilsson.
There you go. You're leaning to the heavies, right? Yeah. So. Nav, yes, I will. If I can find his Twitter, I will tweet him out on this podcast, because he's my draft crush for sure. Well, thank you, everybody, coming in the chat. You guys are always welcome. This is our draft preview here at Hockey Royalty. Hey, we're going to trust in Unetti, right? Unetti, we trust, as always. And we're going to have some post-draft stuff coming up. Russ, you're going to be going on vacation, so it's going to be a while until we see you. Hey, have fun. You know what you're doing there. I appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas.
Joe and I are going to be holding it down next week. I think we're going to be talking about the West and where it got strong or where it got weak and how the Kings fare within that. Appreciate everybody in the chat coming in. You can always find ourselves at hockeyroyalty.com. Articles coming out daily. Follow us on Twitter at hockey_royalty, RandaCommando24, JW Paterino, and at NHL Russo. If you want some rain news, at Kopitar4HOF, DraftKings code THPN. If you are a betting man, and as always on this podcast, go Kings go.